It's kind of, you know, the United States' first blockbuster exhibition. It happened in New York first, and it's called the International Exhibition of Art, of Modern Art, but it came to be known as the Armory Show because it was shown in an armory. It was so big. There were nearly 1,500 works in the show that introduced American audiences to European avant-garde art and some American avant-garde art, Picasso, Matisse, for example, Duchamp, all these artists today who we know as the great modernists of our time. And it was the first time that Americans had ever seen them. But the show traveled to Chicago and also to Boston, and the Art Institute has the special honor of being the only museum to have hosted the show. So it also is the only museum in the country, or the first museum in the country, to show Picasso, for example, to American museum audiences. And it really set a course afterwards. It sort of sparked a flame for modern art in the United States. So while the actual story of the Armory Show may not be very well known to many of us today, it has really important implications for how we know modern art today in the United States.
And how was it received at the time? Was it seen as something revolutionary but wonderful, or was it seen as something that people had skepticism about?
I think it was everything. I mean, the works themselves were not all of them were really that avant-garde. There were representational, naturalistic works that were there, works that were in a very pleasing kind of impressionist vein. But there were, very radical works there as well. There was one work by Marcel Duchamp, who is one of the great innovators of the 20th century, and he made a work called Nude Descending a Staircase, almost a play on impressionist interest in broken brushstrokes and a sense of movement from light. And it's a kind of stop-motion, almost kind of painting of a nude in a cubist kind of look, kind of descending a staircase. And the picture was in many ways the subject of many, many parodies and satires from New York to Chicago to Boston. And whether it was an exhibition that inspired true art lovers at the time or inspired people's curiosity and humor, I think that's part of what made the exhibition so important.
And the Art Institute of Chicago, I read, has the largest collection of Impressionist art outside of Paris.
The Art Institute was founded in 1873, I think, and was a very, very small institution. And the city itself grew as the museum grew. And the people who were the founders of the museum were very interested in what was new at the time because the city was new. And in 1893, when we had the World Columbian Exposition, it was really a fair that celebrated the rebirth of the city after the fire. And there was an exhibition of art there that was contemporary French art that happened to be Impressionism. And so these young collectors, new collectors, who didn't want to collect old master paintings for the Art Institute, were really inspired by the art that they saw there. They saw something about this new painting and this new city, this rebirth of the city, we'll say. And it really became a very important style for them. Mrs. Potter Palmer was one of the people who was so inspired that she became friends with Monet. She acquired many, many works from him. She had a Renoir that she actually took with her wherever she traveled. It was in her train car. It went to her hotel room afterwards. This is an extraordinary kind of experience. And a lot of those collectors gave their works to the Art Institute. So we do have a very rich collection because of that great history.
Talk a bit about the role of patronage in art, because it's crucial, isn't it? And it's something that doesn't get as much attention sometimes, like this exhibit here. It's made possible by patrons and collectors and so on.
It's very, very important. I think especially today in the United States, so many arts institutions are so embattled. There's so many things that are important for funding, whether it's education or healthcare, that it's hard sometimes for people to understand, I think, why the arts deserve people's attention and support. And this exhibition is a great example of the generosity of a collector to make some really amazing works available for people to see. And I think that there's a lot to be said in an age when emails make us move very quickly and we see so much digitally, to take a moment and look at artworks where we have to take some time to look in a different pace and see something that's handmade. And I just think that there's just no substitute when you see the real thing. It's just not the same. There's no competition with something on the internet.
Well, let's take some time and look at some of the art here. wanted to start with this Picasso, and this is a portrait of Olga, and this was done in 1923, and not a painting that I think a lot of people might associate with later Picasso, certainly.
It's a very interesting painting. I mean, first of all, there's always for Picasso the story of Picasso and his women, whether it was Fernand, his first artistic muse, or his first wife, Olga, all the way through. I mean, the man had a very long life and had lots of relationships with lots of women. And I think one reason why we're fascinated by them is because for Picasso, he put so much into those women. They become his muses, his inspiration, and they become the subjects of his works over and over. They become almost like clay or something that he molds and shapes as he kind of comes to different styles. And Olga is a very important person in Picasso's life because she meets him at the time when he is sort of, he's done cubism, he's become known as this leader of this avant-garde style, along with George Braque. And in 1917, he goes to Italy. He has a commission to work on the Ballet Parade, and he is traveling in Italy. It's the first time he's ever been to Rome. He sees Baroque art, Renaissance art, ancient Greek and Roman art. He goes to Pompeii. He sees things he has never seen before. And mixed with the end of World War I, at a time when artists were sort of thinking about a need for a return to order after all that destruction and perhaps an artistic style that was destructive, cubism, there was an interest in returning to something more eternal, something more recognizable, something more peaceful. For Picasso and other artists, it's what they call a retour à l'ordre, or a return to order, a neoclassical style that Picasso begins to develop at the same time that he meets Olga. And so we're looking at this very small, very intimate, very beautiful, I think very delicately painted portrait of Picasso's first wife, made at the period of time when he has a new kind of stability in his life. He has a son with Olga, and we see him painting in a very naturalistic style. This is not Picasso the Cubist, though he still is making Cubist art at this time. And it's a remarkable picture because if you get up really close and you look at it, you'll see that he has sort of sketched her. You can watch how he's started to lay paint in around the shape of the eyes as if he's almost using the paint like clay to sort of model the surface of her face. Her hair is very delicately painted. It's a very, very, as I said, intimate, I think, painting of this woman who means so much to him.
I love the gaze. There's a hint of sadness to her eyes, but also just such a thoughtful look.
Mm-hmm. Very introspective, I think.
Let's look at a later Picasso. This was done in 1956.
A very, very different Picasso at this point. And we're looking, ironically, at Picasso's other wife. Now, this is Jacqueline. After Olga passes away, Picasso is free to marry and has met this wonderful woman, Jacqueline, who brings Picasso a great amount of peace at the end of his life. And he meets her at a moment when he's working in the south of France after World War II. He, in the south of France, has the opportunity to rediscover the ceramics industry there, which is a kind of dying industry when he first meets the people who work there, one of whom is Jacqueline, his second wife. And he starts a kind of collaboration with the Madura Pottery firm and begins to paint on the ceramics there. Very traditional forms that he finds and decorates. And you can see in this painting not only this portrait of the woman, but the influence of that experience in his painting now. So there's a beautiful sort of decorative quality, I think, in the way that he paints, especially Jacqueline's form. It's very, very spare, but there's just enough there that we can recognize her profile and see her body. What's interesting is that all the area of her face and her arms, for example, there's not actually that much paint there. He's sort of encompassed the blank canvas or the spare canvas with these simple lines, very decorative lines like he might have painted on a ceramic. And she is sort of one half of the canvas. The other half of the canvas is a painting by Picasso that Jacqueline is actually looking at. And we see this kind of interior space, the artist's studio, this beautiful kind of window and this palm tree outside, and then a canvas standing on an easel and a sculpture on the side, and the canvas is blank. There's a beautiful kind of light that's coming in that hits the floor. And it's a painting, I think, so much about negative and positive space and what's painted and what's not. And as a kind of, I think, parting shot, Picasso actually went into the wet paint you can see in the top of the easel, for example, and on the side, that kind of decorative figure. And he actually took, maybe it was the back of his brush or a palette knife or something, and actually scraped the paint out. So we're watching him remove paint in a kind of further play off the negative spaces that aren't painted in the picture. It's remarkable, very quick, actually, quickly painted picture, but I think one that shows a lot of creativity.
Picasso was so prolific, of course, but what explains why he is known as the greatest artist? The most well-known.
I think one reason why he's known so much in the 20th century is because he was very prolific. And unlike other artists, you might think about like Matisse, for example, who's also right up there. Picasso, if he was painting a picture like this and decided that there was another way to do it, he'd just pick up another canvas and make another picture. Whereas Matisse would start to work on a picture like this, decide it wasn't right, wash it down, and start over again. Picasso is very quick. I think he had a sense of experimentation, and he was very interested in his process. I mean, very aware of his process of creation, and allowed lots of things to be kind of not finished in a certain way. Like Matisse would labor over something and look for the most perfect expression. Picasso would say, well, that's one variation. I'm going to try it another way. So he produced a lot of work. But I think he's also very well respected because he had a wide range of styles. And even in this exhibition, you'll see two great versions of neoclassicism and also, you know, still in the vein in the 50s of cubism. And he could very comfortably, in the same day even, produced pictures in two different styles. And that's what I think makes him so special, is that he really did have a great artistic skill and a great level of creativity.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about how much different it is to see the painting in person.
Yep.
And to go to the exhibit and have the personal experience. It is so much more personal than seeing it online, for example.
I think so. I mean, when I look at a picture, I always first sort of just look at the image itself, but I always try to take the time to once I can figure out maybe what the subject is or what pleases me or what's intriguing about it, always take the time to look at the paint strokes and the way that something is made, because you always have to remember that a person made this and there was nothing on that canvas in the beginning. And that's where I think, just like when a musical, a piece of music is performed, that's where the true invention is. The moment when an artist puts that brush on the canvas or a palette knife in the case of Picasso, and you can't see that when you look at something on the screen. It's just not there.
Well, what a treat to look at these paintings with an expert. And I have been speaking with Stephanie D'Alessandro, who's a curator of art at the Art Institute of Chicago. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here today.